on the road again. Just can't wait to get on the road again. The life I love is making music with my friends, and I can't wait to get on the road again.
Well, I don't know if we're going to be making some music, but we'll do our best. Good evening. It's 35 minutes after 6 o'clock. You're listening to Raven Radio, KCAW in Sitka. It's time for a radio town hall meeting. The topic is Driving Us Crazy, How to Pay for Pavement in Sitka. I'm Robert Woolsey, news director here at Raven Radio. I'd like to introduce Municipal Administrator Mark Gorman.
Thanks. Good evening.
Thanks, Mark.
Glad to be joined by Willie Nelson as well.
Yes, it's we're getting off to a good start anyway. And Public Works Director Michael Harmon is here as well. Hi, Michael.
Good evening.
And we're going to actually begin tonight's town hall meeting with a presentation by Michael. And he's going to be describing the situation in Sitka with his our roads as he sees it. And you can follow along with Michael's PowerPoint presentation by going to our website, kcaw.org. It's only 12 slides, and if you just go to our website and click on the link for this program, you'll get a window that opens up that shows the very slides that Michael will be talking about. We're going to do that for a few minutes, and we're going to be joined by some special guests. Hugh Bevan is here tonight. He's a former municipal administrator and public works director. Max Rule, who's just identifying himself as a citizen, but I see Max at a lot of events around town. I see him at the Chamber of Commerce, and I know that he's very engaged in civic life here in Sitka, and I thought his perspective would be valuable. Jerry Hope is going to be in tonight. We hope he's the director of the Sitka Community Ride, and Senator Bert Stedman is also here. And they're all going to bring their individual perspective to the problem of how to fund and maintain Sitka's municipal road system. We also invite listener participation tonight, but this is not a public hearing. A town hall meeting is for the exchange of ideas and not for complaining to your elected officials about potholes. We don't have any elected officials here except for Senator Stedman, but Sitka streets aren't necessarily his bailiwick. There are numerous ways to complain to your city officials, though, if you'd like to, through email or persons to be heard at assembly meetings, or just buttonholing them on the street like everybody else. But this is a town hall meeting to sort of discuss ideas for solving what Michael Harmon is going to demonstrate is a bit of a head-scratcher for us here in Sitka. So we're going to open phone lines a little later this evening. The number is 747-5877. You can email your ideas to news@kcaw.org. And we've also started up a thread on the Raven Radio Facebook page that a number of people have already started to contribute comments and ideas to. But with that, for introduction, I'm going to hand it to Mark Gorman and Michael Harmon to explain the problem with funding and maintaining Sitka's roads.
Well, I'd just like to start off with a thanks to KCAW for hosting this evening. We're trying to experiment with a number of different fora where we can engage the public and have a meaningful exchange about concerns and issues facing Sitka. And I think this is the second one. We did one calling upon the former administrators here to give their ideas as to how we can move forward in a positive way in Sitka. And so I think this is a more focused, targeted area that Michael's done a lot of work on, and hear from him now about it.
Yeah, I should preface this by saying, our last town hall meeting was a sort of in-person town hall meeting at the Maksutov Room at Harrigan Centennial Hall. A lot of people came and sat in the audience. Today we're just doing it on the radio, and it does feel a bit like a boys' club again, and I canvassed a number of people to join us tonight, including some women in town and some very engaged, civic-minded women, and these are the guys we got tonight. So I thank them, everyone, for showing up tonight and doing this. And we're not trying to be exclusive, but this is just the way it's rolling tonight anyway on roads. But Michael Harmon, Public Works Director.
Sure, thanks. I appreciate the opportunity. Hopefully this is the beginning of many more discussions so more people can get engaged. And I really do feel that it's a community decision. There's choices to be made, and I just want to make sure that data is out there so we can make educated decisions and don't kind of miss opportunities and windows to capitalize on improving our roads. So What I have here is kind of condensed PowerPoint presentation that I put together. I'll walk through, hopefully. Some can be on the website looking at it, but if not, hopefully I kind of explain it well as we go through it. So what I wanted to start out with is why are we talking about roads, other than the obvious that you can see the deterioration out there and they're not in very good shape? You know, why is it suddenly an issue? And it's kind of a unique history in Sitka that many of our roads, other than the downtown roads, were paved in the 80s and 90s by way of state funding. So pretty much entirely done at one time, all our residential streets out of downtown through that funding. So it really didn't come through the municipal funding or local taxes. And things back then were very rich in state funding to do that. And throughout the state, a lot that happened, that many of the communities had that done. And so at that time, it was an interesting decision point for Sitka. We got a certain amount of funding that came in. And looking at our roads, we had an opportunity to pave almost all our residential roads, but pave it in a way that you basically just put 2 inches down and go over the top of the gravel that we had. Don't worry about the subgrade and doing a lot of work to improve it where it wouldn't have settling problems and issues. Going that route and getting as many miles per dollar done, or go with reconstructing all the subgrade and get very little done per mile, but done very well. Well, the decision back then was made. We want more miles done. We have gravel roads that are doing fairly okay. We feel like it will still have a decent life cycle, and we'll benefit from having almost all our roads paved. I think that decision has paid off very well. I think you look at the condition of our roads, but they're 20 to 25 years, sometimes 30 years old. A typical life cycle of a road is 15 to 20. In many instances, when you have truck traffic on it, it's 15. We're blessed. We don't have a lot of that in Sitka. So they've lasted their life very well. They've held up. We have certain areas that do have subgrade issues, but you can see them now over all these years, where that's at, where it's settling. So when we go back to redo them, the positive of that, we can really see where those areas are, focus on them, not rebuild the whole road, but get those areas done. So that's kind of the history, and why we are where we are is, well, we got the state funding, and that didn't continue to flow. The life cycle of the roads ran through their course, and the city didn't save money to replace them. We did some very basic maintenance over the years, but the time has come. They're all similar age. Time's come for them to replace. And to make the issue more extreme, we've actually had an increase in inventory. A lot of us think, well, Sitka hasn't changed much. We've been 9,000 population forever, but actually, through the residential development, we've seen a 33% increase in our city street inventory. Not all paved, but most of them are. So that takes a hit, too. So not only have we not been saving for what we already have, we have grown more than what people, I think, tend to realize. So, you know, in the recent past, what have we done to try and address that? And I think folks are aware of some of the local items. We've had a couple ballot propositions gone through. In 2009, we had one for a 0.5% sales tax increase to generate $7 million for roads over a 20-year period. And that failed, 572 votes versus 465. And then in 2011, we had a similar one, but it was on a 0.5 millage rate of property tax. And that failed more significantly. That was 1,282 versus 792. So for whatever reason, and those weren't really to take care of all the roads, but they were to get a start on some of our road issues and get some of the main downtown roads focused on. That really wasn't popular with the community. We've also pursued state funding throughout the last couple of years, and luckily 2 years ago we got money, and we're utilizing that for Edgecombe Drive, and we got almost $3 million. That was the great year that everything we put in the capital plan, Sitka, received.
But and I think that number is significant, Michael, that we got $3 million for Edgecombe Drive, but that doesn't cover the full cost of Edgecombe Drive.
Right, it didn't cover the full cost of Edgecombe Drive, so we're supplementing that with the infrastructure sinking fund that the Assembly worked hard to put together and piece some money in that over the years. And so we've utilized most of that money and the state money to get our biggest street, our most expensive, heaviest used street in the city inventory. And also I want to iterate that the city inventory doesn't include Elbert Point Road, Sawmill Creek Road, Harbor Drive over to the airport. Those are state routes. They certainly see all the most of the truck traffic and the real heavy abuse. So we're lucky we don't have to fund those. The other success we've had is in DEC grant programs where we're taking care of our utilities, and that's where we've gotten Baranoff Street, Monastery Street done, Edelin, and some of these that you've seen around town. How did we get those done? Well, it really wasn't through much road funding at all. We got that through DEC utility funding, and since you're basically tearing up the whole road to get those utilities done, the lion's share of that was funded through that year water and sewer grants and loans. So we've capitalized that on it as much as we can. We've applied for various state grants outside of the legislative appropriation requests, and we really don't compete well. We don't have heavy traffic. We don't have the highway type attributes that they're looking for in these grants. So it'd be much more of an acreage type situation, and Juneau's got that a little bit with their main highway. So unfortunately, we don't compete well at the state and federal level. Road repairs, one thing I want to touch, and I'm on slide 4 now, just looking at the costing. And there's an important historical perspective that I take on the Sitka roads, whereas 15 years ago, in a perfect world, 10 to 15 years ago, before our roads got heavily cracked and abused, we really should have got on it with some preventative maintenance and done an overlay program. And if you can do an overlay program, you get your cost around $30 a square yard to pave a road on average. And you can grind the top layer down if you need to match curb and gutter. You can do some grinding to drop that elevation down to match everything up and do a simple overlay. And if we can get our program on a steady routine of being on it more often, that preventative maintenance, we'll see our life cycle costs get much better. Whereas right now, in full replacement for a curb and gutter, we're at $285 a square yard versus that $30 a square yard. And then for our non-curb gutter sidewalk underground drainage, so a lot of our residential streets that are just ditched and have straight paving, that's $73 a square yard to pull it all up and then repave it versus just putting a $30 square yard overlay. So we're getting hit by those heavier costs because we didn't get on the preventative maintenance when that window opportunity. So my goal in this, and I'll stress throughout, that when we produce our next program, we really want to build in 15 years that we don't miss that window and get this in the long future for the next generations. It will be a much more sustainable program at a lower dollar rate.
Okay.
To maintain. So on slide 5, I'm on now just looking at the distribution of our road system, and you'll notice this is what we call the remaining service life, and we have a consultant that comes through, and we haven't done this for 3 years now, so the state is a little aged. We hope to update this year, but they come through and they have a specific matrix that they do on all the roads to grade them. And basically what this is showing, it's our 80s and 90s roads that were done in that era are all front loaded from an RSL 10 to an RSL 0 is the bulk of our inventory. And the reality of that is everything 10 and down is beyond what we can overlay, and we are in a reconstruction mode, so it's the heavy cost that we're dealing with in that situation. The positive is if you go out to year 20, we've made a blip on the radar screen, so that big block of a number of projects shown on year 20 is what we've done in the last 5 years to rebuild and reset that life cycle to the end. And so we have made a dent, but we got a long ways to go. And and as we go into the next slides, I kind of put it out, well, what does this cost look at like over our life cycle? And in 20 years, we're looking at an inventory of about $50 million that we have to deal with and replace. And so I've graphed that what that means over time. So that's $2.7 million a year to fund that and keep a sustainable program going. And then once we get past 20 years and get into the overlay, you can see that graph kind of flattening out. And what's that showing is we're getting to the lower $30 square yard cost. So,
right, Michael, I had a question. We'll get through all these slides yet tonight. We are going to bring in Hugh Bevan to talk a little bit, but I had a question about that last number, the $50 million.
Mm-hmm.
That's the total package. What, in order to sort of make this all work as you've laid it out, and I gather you want to go for the best repair possible. You think that we probably, by going for the most miles per dollar, might have kind of bitten ourselves a little bit in the backside now.
Well, I actually would still think we should continue that trend because they have performed well. They've met their life cycle, but we'd want to repair the areas that you can clearly see the soft spots and the settling areas. So spend a little bit more on those pocket locations, but more or less continue that. The numbers, I haven't even ran numbers on that. If we went and rebuild the roads with the proper subgrade, you'd typically have a 2-foot section underneath your asphalt, the cost would just be absolutely overwhelming to do that.
Right. And but to get the program going and get it up on step now, what kind of funding are you talking about? $2.7 million
a year. And some of the further slides we'll get into, I laid out some other options of different funding arrays we could look at that changes that number, but that's the bulk number.
All right.
That we're really after, fortunately, to fund our system as it is today.
All right.
And just to add to that, Rob, in this year's proposed budget, we have $1.3 million, so we're 1.4 short of that target.
Halfway there, but significantly more funding than has been applied in the recent past for this. Good evening, Hugh Bevan. Thanks for coming in.
Thanks for asking.
Hugh Bevan is former municipal administrator. You've had the jobs of both these guys in the past, and you're an engineer and still active in the world of building big stuff?
You know, actually, I've been retired for the last couple of years.
Oh, okay.
So,
out chasing bears most of the time. All right.
Hugh,
it's a town hall meeting. It's about ideas. When you hear this problem and these numbers and you filter it through your experience, what do you kind of make of it?
Well, I agree a lot with everything that's been said. The road system is a big system. And it's going to take consistent and dedicated revenue to address it. It needs dedicated revenue as opposed to trying to live with handouts from the general fund budget. I mean, to Mr. Gorman's credit, $1.3 million this year is really it's really a great thing for roads. But when you look at the overall size of the system that Michael's described, you won't get there without some sort of dedicated revenue stream.
And that's kind of what we're talking about. That's what we're looking for, is trying to identify what that revenue stream is.
Part of the problem is it's going to take a while for everyone to understand that the economics of Alaska are changing, and we've lived for the last 40 years with basically a river of money coming out of Juneau. And so I think we have to look more to ourselves to solve this problem.
I wonder if that was part of the problem 20 years ago, Michael, when these roads were built. They just assumed that the money would keep coming. It didn't seem like it was going to be a finite sort of thing.
Yeah.
I think that can be applied to all our enterprise funds right now.
Sure.
We didn't bank.
Right.
We didn't save.
Right. this part of the program is available to listeners. If you'd like to participate, you could call 747-5877, or you can post a comment to Facebook or email. We've got Municipal Administrator Mark Gorman, Public Works Director Michael Harmon is here, and former Municipal Administrator and Public Works Director Hugh Bevan are here. Hugh is one of several guest panelists who'll be in. We're talking about the road problem in Sitka and how to pay for maintaining what we've got. So, Hugh.
You know, I think one thing that might help is if we divided the streets into two groups. The first group being the what's called an arterial street or major collector street, like Lincoln or a Lake Street or Edgecombe Drive, and treat those like every other major capital project in the general fund, be it Centennial Hall or whatever. It's a community effort. And then the other group, the residential streets, and treat them separately. I've seen some nice roads programs where the residential streets were driven by the property owners. They decided when they wanted their street fixed, and they participated financially in those repairs. And it worked really well because the neighborhoods were behind the project when it came to the assembly.
Yeah, that's a question I had for you guys, and we touched on it a little bit, Mark, when we were prepping earlier this afternoon. Our Sitka's, you know, we have enterprise funds for electricity and water and harbors and so on. And our Sitka's roads, are they more like harbors or are they more like schools, which we fund for sort of the greater good? And it seems like Hugh is suggesting that some roads are there for the good of the community, mm-hmm. and other roads ought to be looked at more as paid for through kind of user fees neighborhoods.
And I think Hugh's approach is really interesting. We were challenged with that approach recently when we did a community meeting for a LID in the Gavin subdivision. And one of the things that was brought back to our attention is why in the Gavin subdivision do we have to pay for our roads when you're picking up the full price of Edgecombe Drive?
Right.
And so there's that pushback from the community is we're all taxpayers here. Why don't we benefit equally? And I think that requires more engagement with the community.
And an LID can't be imposed on a neighborhood. A majority has to support it, right?
Right. As the ordinance is currently set up, it has to be a 50% majority, and it's based on the assessed value. So, you know, they can... property owners can petition for that, or the city can start the process, but it can't be dictated upon them. Certainly, if you developed a road program and build LID into it, the ordinance could be changed or restructured in a different way. Historically, the city hasn't put money into the LIDs. They've provided a loan program at low interest for that as an opportunity, whereas, you know, you could tweak that. And one scenario I worked in that you can see on the slides while we're in the LID, I kind of pursued an approach of that where we did an example of one-third property owners would pay on one side of the street a third, the other side a third, and the city then would put in a third for residential streets.
Which slide is that, Michael?
I segregated that out, and it starts on slide 7. I just talk about the pros and cons of LIDs, which we've touched. I mean, you have the challenge, it does take a majority, so you can end up with kind of a patchwork quilt, so to speak, in terms of some communities say yes, some communities don't, so you're driving on gravel, the pavement to gravel, and then the fairness issues of do I get assessed the same as others? Those are all the issues that we see on Gavin, but it is an option that many communities utilize. And when I ran that through, what I did on slide 8, I kind of start that scenario of the one-third, and I took out the residential streets. And if you reference to slide 9, it just shows the downtown corridor, because everything outside of the downtown corridor would be considered residential streets. And your primary streets, like Hugh's talking about, your collectors are in red. and those would be funded 100% by the city, whereas the green roads, your residential ones, which is a lot of them, you know, you go outside your primary ones, would be your Etchcombe Drive, Catlian, Lincoln, Lake Streets, but you go outside of that, all those green ones, I ran a model of an LID, one-third, 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 and the interesting thing that I found, so what that does to the cost, instead of $2.7 million a year, what I came up with, is it drops it down to $2 million a year. So it does make an impact. I expected it to make a bigger impact since it's such a large portion of miles of our roads, but what it is, it's that lower dollar miles.
Right.
Our primary collectors are the high dollars, so it didn't quite make as big of an impact as I would have guessed, but it does make an impact. I mean, $700,000 a year taken off of the program and supported by the locals.
Yeah, but this is $700,000 that neighborhoods would be
right.
paying
then
for their
the individual
payment.
Neighbor would have yeah. to commit to that, and a district would have to be formed either by street or by area. Some communities do entire areas as right. kind of an enterprise fund, is it, so to speak.
Of itself, of yeah. its own. LID stands for a Local Improvement District, and we're talking about this on a live radio town hall meeting called Driving Us Crazy, How to Pay for Pavement in Sitka over Raven Radio, KCAW in Sitka. And we did get a question on Facebook that came up that comes right into this idea. This plan of making neighborhoods pay to have decent roads could result in social inequality. You'll have some neighborhoods able to afford it and some unable. It will also further peel away at our housing crisis, devaluing certain areas and their properties. You have a reaction to that?
Well, this actually works right in my third point that I wanted to make, and that is we are already paying for the streets through the accelerated depreciation of all of our vehicles. It's a big number. If you've had any shock absorbers replaced on your car or bought a new tire recently or tried to sell a car and found out that it's actually worth less than it should be because you've been driving it on Sitka streets, we're paying for it. And we aren't getting the benefit of having good streets, so that hidden cost needs to be kept in the mix here as far as how we consider this problem.
Right. Good. Yeah. These questions are coming in on Facebook. You can go to the Raven Radio Facebook page. What do you think, Mark, about the idea of creating, I don't know, stratifying Sitka based on who can afford an LID or not?
Well, certainly fees, raising fees has been very topical at recent assembly meetings, and it's on the minds of most Sitkins right now is how far can we push our citizens in terms of paying for the services they currently get? And are we at a tipping point? I don't know. Assessing LIDs for the residential roads. Certainly the vibe we got at the Gavin subdivision meeting was not positive in terms of citizens wanting to pick up additional costs. Hmm. I think we'll have to do a lot more community education, engage the public at different levels to get their thoughts on how we move forward with this.
Interesting. Hugh's idea about accelerated depreciation of vehicles is sort of touched a nerve with me. I'm not an old-timer by the definition of old-timer in Sitka, but I've been around long enough to remember when a lot of our residential streets were gravel and the rusted-out pickup kind of ruled Sitka's roads. You remember,
yeah.
too, Michael?
Yeah, I had one of those.
Yes.
In fact, the door fell off going around the corner, and I flew out and went sliding on the door down the road. So, yeah, I remember that.
A new sport. Didn't make it into the Olympics this time, but it's our vehicle fleet is significantly upgraded over the years, and there's significant value rolling around out there.
Yeah. And the other thing is that my first point was that if we don't pay for it, who will?
Mm-hmm.
That's what we're here to ask.
Michael may get to this, but there was an ordinance floated a couple years ago by the Assembly for a vehicle tax. and had that passed, and that ordinance can pass without going to the public, I think that would have generated, was it $650,000?
It's actually $914,000. Yeah, it's pretty good. So down at the threshold they were talking about.
Okay. So if we were able to get something like that as a dedicated road tax and be able to continue putting $1.3 million into roads, we'd be pretty close to meeting that need. We could probably patch together the rest of that amount. So that would be one approach to addressing that need.
Yeah, those Sitka voters twice in the past 5 years have declined to raise taxes just for roads. Do you think it was...
This would not go to the voters. Oh. This is an ordinance that could be passed by the Assembly.
Just be a solution.
Yeah, yeah. Potentially. I think one thing I heard loud and clear through the several years of discussing this that seemed like, if anything, folks were hungry for a way that it was a taxation or a funding that was based on the amount that you use the road. So the immediate one that came up was a fuel tax. The more mm-hmm. you fill up your car, the more you need paying. Well, in the state of Alaska, we can't do that. So the licensing became kind of the next best thing that is based on the number of vehicles you have. The heavier loads or the more axles you have, the more you pay, and trailers and things. So it was a way to get at kind of a measurable usage of getting what you pay for. That.
All right. We have a caller on the line. Patricia, thanks
Hi.
For joining our forum. Do you have a comment or idea or question?
Well, I do. I hope I'm not mistaken. I have all my radios shut off. I am getting an echo. Are you getting an echo?
No, you sound just great to us.
Okay, good. That I live on Edgecombe Drive, and everyone along Edgecombe Drive paid LIDs when we first started building, or when the new road came in, or I don't exactly remember when that was, but we all paid LIDs up here, so that's just the way it is.
Any institutional memory for an LID for Edgecombe Drive?
I really don't. You know, the caller, Patricia, maybe you know, I was kind of wondering on that. I was trying to research if that was when the road was originally built, but gravel still, that there was an LID, or when it was actually paved. That was before any files I could find. I know the road pavement's about 25 years old, so.
Well, we definitely had LIDs. I definitely remember that. But it could have been for the sewer line. But that's an LID anyhow. It might not have been for the roads, but,
sure.
It would be good. I mean, we definitely paid LIDs, and probably the new houses don't, pay the LIDs because they've already been paid. But I was on Edgecombe Drive, one of the first, and the first of the ones paid LIDs, and then if you sold your house, you already paid your LID.
Interesting. Well, regardless of the history, and we're relying heavily on your memory, Patricia, thank you
yes.
for that. I'm also a longtime Edgecombe Drive resident, and I don't recall any LID, but I might be one of the latecomers.
Did you buy your house?
Yeah.
Well, that they had probably paid off the LID.
Yeah. Okay, that makes sense. But LIDs are a fairly common way. It's not anything that anybody dreamed up here in Sitka, so
correct. I mean, definitely, as building our own house on Edgecombe Drive, we had LIDs, and anybody else that built their own house up here had LIDs.
All right.
And I'm not sure how Wartman Loop was handled, but I bet they had LIDs too.
All right, Patricia, thanks you very much for calling in and your observation.
You're very welcome. Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Bye bye. Hugh, do you have any final thing to say before we bring Max Rule in?
No.
All right. Stick around if you can. Obviously, I think you've touched a nerve with this idea. Not that you dreamed it up. You can't take exclusive credit for it. But it is the idea of maybe segregating our road system might be one that could roll around City Hall quite a bit. So. Hugh Bevan will be stepping out. We'll be bringing in Max Rule.
Thanks, Hugh.
Do you want to continue with your
thoughts, Michael? Well, I was thinking about Patricia's call, and since we're doing Edgecombe Drive, I got the numbers tuned to my head. So we're talking about a $6 million road project that we're doing right now, divided by 87 residents, I believe, that live along Edgecombe Drive. So I think if I'm doing my math right, you're talking about an LID of $70,000 per resident. So it's a pretty, say LIDs sound good, but the roads are very expensive compared to what they were back 25 years ago.
Would that be the one-third, one-third, one-third?
No, it wouldn't. So okay. I was just doing a straight, if we went off the code, the way the code is written today,
right?
How that would work. So yeah, you can do the one-third, one-third and kind of play around with those numbers to get an idea of the cost on that.
So a $25,000 LID by each resident spread over 20 years is... So that's probably more in the ballpark of where people might go.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway.
Yeah. So, yes, if we want to, one thing I wanted to touch upon, we did a little bit, but historically on page 11, if you're following along on the slides, it's just kind of interesting to look at what funds the general fund has put forth over the last 10 years or so. So it gives you a sense of that, and you can see in 2015 we've hit it with a big number, but historically we've only averaged about $400,000 a year towards roads, but we have implemented a general fund sinking fund for infrastructure, and that's looked at every year. So when the budget's closed out and if there's any remaining surplus funds that are transferred over, there's an equation that's utilized and a recommendation goes forward for that to be preserved for our infrastructure. So that's been some real positive progress. And one helpful one I tried to put together when you're brainstorming dollars of revenue, and I know it's painful to look at taxes and some of this stuff, but a lot of folks ask, what does 1% sales tax bring in, or our summertime versus wintertime? So on sheet 12, I tried to itemize that sales tax 1% brings in $1.6 million a year. So gives you an idea, one millage rate is about $1 million. Again, we looked at the vehicle licensing tax that could bring in close to $1 million a year, but depend on what you set the fees at. And then the residential LIDs at one-third, one-third for residential roads at $700,000 a year. So that gives you some numbers to just kind of play with in different combinations and things to think about what the impacts of them would be.
So no one thing is going to do it. It's going to be in order to get to $2.7 million a year, it's going to be some combination of financing.
It's probably what's most palatable. I think the most important thing is it's dedicated, so it's consistent and you can plan on it.
Well, speaking of financing, Max Rule is here. Hi, Max. Come on up to the microphone.
Good evening. How are you tonight?
Yeah, and are you CFO of Hames Corporation?
Yeah, I'm CFO at Hames Corp.
Chief Financial Officer. Hames Corporation, and financing is kind of part of the picture.
It is. It seems like it's a big picture. I think Michael brought up a good point that there is no easy answers, and it's end up being a combination of several revenue sources and funding sources.
After I called you and invited you on this program, did you have any brainstorms? Did you any eureka moments?
No. My first thought was, why did they call me to talk about roads?
Well, I thought we need roads to get to we need roads to do commerce.
Well, I do believe and feel that infrastructure in the community is very important. I think it leads to the quality of life. It's what makes the community unique and livable. And I think roads are a very important part of that infrastructure. I think I appreciate the city and applaud the city for addressing the issue, because I think there's a tremendous amount of deferred maintenance, not only on the roads, but also in our buildings and other areas in the community. So I think it's the first right step to at least be addressing it, get the issues out there, and let the public weigh in on the issues.
The other reason I talk to you, Max, is because you strike me as somebody who's very engaged in the community, but you are sort of post-Big Oil era. I mean, you were not around in the late 80s and 90s when when the pipeline was really flowing.
That's correct. Yeah, I moved to Alaska in 1985. Yeah. I've been part of the Sitka community since 1993.
Okay, but so you experienced it probably in other communities, though.
I did, and I've actually physically lived in Sitka for a little over 10 years now.
Okay.
But I've been part of the community since 93. Previously, I lived in Ketchikan, and there was tremendous amounts of development down there with the cruise ship industry and a lot of changes. I personally had experience with an LID that we did down there. I thought the process worked well. We lived in a subdivision that was gravel roads and there was always potholes and maintenance was always an issue. And several of the property owners, including myself, got together and investigated what it would take to do an LID and went through the process, paved the roads. And we found that, as Hugh said, there was less damage to our vehicles, cleaner vehicles. The neighborhood was quieter, less dust. I mean, it was a nice improvement. And just when it got finished, I moved up here, so I only got the benefit of about for 6 months. But it was a nice improvement.
But you made the decision to do it. You were one of the.
I was one of the ones. Yeah, yeah.
You're listening to a live radio town hall meeting on how to fund and maintain Sitka's roads on Raven Radio, KCAW in Sitka. It's quarter after 7 o'clock. You can participate in this forum by calling us at 747-5877. You can email us news@kcaw.org. You can also go to the Raven Radio Facebook page and post a comment on the town hall thread.